What if you were to receive a phone call that said, there is a long-lost relative that has passed, and we've looked into it, and you're the next in line, and we have $50 million that is coming to you, and you receive that. What would we do? Many of us, let's be honest, we would say, yeah, right. Because it must be a scam, right? And there's lots of scams. There are a lot of things that today we live in a day of people trying to take advantage of us. You know, we get emails, oh, I'm stuck overseas, and if you'll just help me get a ticket home, then you know, I will then pay you double back. And it's like, no, I don't think so. We get those letters that just seem too good to be true, right? But if you got this call or a letter that said that, for that much, let's be honest, would you not even look into it a little bit? You know, you might just pull it up, look at it, or call a number, or just to find out. You might research the company that you know, the lawyer or whatever that says they're handling it. You would at least look into it. And I think this is the promise that we have in the resurrection. Because the offer is just too good. What the resurrection offers us, it is so big. It's bigger than $50 million. And yet, let's be honest, again, many people say the same thing. It's just a scam. This is just a scam. It's just a religious thing to pull us in, to get us into this almost cultic belief, and then give us their money. And yet, let's be honest, why do we not at least look into it? And this is the great thing that we're going to look at, that God expects us to. He's not asking us to, by blind faith, just decide, okay, yeah. It is not like any other religion. It is not like any other promise. God says, I want you to check it out because it is too big of a promise to just ignore. And yet so many people are ignoring this promise because of whatever reason. And yet it is before us. It is an unexpected encounter with God. And I think so many times God works in ways that are unexpected. See, many people believe it's a scam because God couldn't work that way or this couldn't happen. And yet God says, I don't work in the expected way. And it's okay to doubt. It's okay to try me and see. I want you to. And that is unexpected to some people because that's not how they view God. That's not their ideas of the way God works. And yet today, I want to look at the unexpected nature of the resurrection. And so we're going to read through the story in John, and hopefully we will see some new things that God calls us to. Maybe something unexpected to you that have heard the story over and over again all your life. I want God to open up something new and unexpected to you this morning. If you'll just check it out. That's all I'm asking you. Would you give your heart to it? Will you begin to let God show you something maybe unexpected? We're going to read from John chapter 20, starting in verse 1. This is what it says. Now, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple. And this other disciple is John himself, who is writing this. And so in his humility, he only refers to himself as the other disciple, whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Peter therefore went out, and the other disciple, and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen clothes lying there, yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him, and he went into the tomb, and he saw the linen clothes lying there. And the handkerchief which had been around the head was not lying with the linen clothes, but it was folded together in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who came to the tomb first went in also, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away again to their homes. But Mary stood outside by the tomb, weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the tomb. And she saw two angels in white sitting, one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. And then they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "Because they have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Now when she had said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there. But she did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" And she supposed him to be the gardener and said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will go and take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." And she turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say, "teacher." And Jesus said to her, "Do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and to your Father and to my God and your God." And Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord and that he had spoken these things to her. And so this morning, Mary and the disciples experienced the unexpected, what they would not have ever expected, which is funny, even though Jesus had told them over and over again, but it was, and we're going to talk about this, it was outside of their comprehension, or they understood it in a different way. They believed what he said, but we will look into what their understanding of his words were. And we're going to see that this unexpected encounter really had four different parts. First of all, it was rational. It was unexpectedly rational. Second, it was unexpectedly merciful. There is an unexpected compassion that we see in this. Thirdly, it is unexpectedly personal. What we wouldn't expect this to be, and yet it is personal. And the final thing, we're going to see that it is unexpectedly wonderful. And today, I want you to experience the wonderful result, the promise that is put forth by the resurrection. So let's look at these. First of all, it was rational. We see that the resurrection was never meant to be something that had to just be some spiritual faith that was something you just had to take for granted. Over and over again, God calls them to rationally reason and see the evidence that the resurrection is not a myth, it is not a story, it is not a religious credo that was made up, but there is evidence, there is physical, observable, scientific evidence that God has risen from the dead and overcome death and given us life. We see that God, from the very beginning, calls them to reason. And he gives them evidence. And there is lots of evidence. You might say, well, that was them back then. You know, okay, for them, they were there, so they could look at the evidence. I can't look at the evidence. We can't see what is there. It's been too long. And yet, that is not true. And I'm going to encourage you, if there is a skepticism within you, there are great evidences and manuscripts and things laid out that will give you the... I encourage you, look into it. Go and search it out. The problem is most people that don't believe, they do not search it out. They just blindly, they use more faith to not believe than those that believe. They refuse to even search out the truth because they don't want to believe. But I encourage you, if you are truly open-minded and want the truth, look into it. But I am going to give you a couple evidences that are given even in this passage that we can, you might say, well, we can't take this passage as evidence because it was written back then and they could have written whatever you want. Well, we're going to look at what was written and why what was written is even itself an evidence to the veracity of the resurrection. First of all, we look at Peter and John when they came to the tomb itself. First of all, John, who wrote this account, had no expectation or belief that Jesus was going to rise again. So there was no plan on, okay, we're going to deceive everyone by writing this story of Jesus rising again, and we're going to start this religion, even though we know it's a lie, and it's going to pull everyone in. And even though it was going to cost them their life, who would give their life for a lie? Now, many people will tell a lie and make up stories to do lots of things, to make money, to get fame, to raise their status. These disciples got none of that. So in telling this supposed lie, it does not even make sense that they would make this up and not receive any of the things that would come of that. But within the passage, it said three times that they came in and they saw the tomb was empty. They saw the linen clothes lying there and the handkerchief from the head lying in a different spot. But the word that is used there is not blepo, which is the Greek word to see. In other words, oh, I saw it. But instead, it uses the word theorio. And this is where we get the word theory or theorize. In other words, it is the word to gaze on for the purpose of analyzing. In other words, it's a very scientific term. It says they came in and observed and reasoned. They didn't just see, ooh, the tomb is empty. It says they came in and said, what is going on? Because they had no expectation of Jesus rising. Remember, they had run for their lives. They were in fear, hiding. They were not out trying to raise a following for Jesus. They thought it was over. And so even John himself says, I came in and saw. In other words, I began to reason. Okay, why would this be? Because here's the thing. Here's what they reasoned. Why would the linen clothes be lying here? Because first of all, if a grave robber came in and stole the body, which is what many people say. Oh yeah, they think he was alive, but someone came in and stole the body because it was in a rich man's tomb, and so they were assuming that they could gain from it. And they could have. But if that's the case, they would have taken the linen wrappings with them because, first of all, the linen wrappings were of value because of the cloth, and the spices that were in it that they would prepare a body with were very expensive. And so why, if they stole the body, would they leave the most expensive part that would give them gain? It makes no sense. And so they reasoned, why is this here? And then also if they reasoned, maybe it was the disciples that took the body. Now, here's the case. They could have, but why would they leave the linen clothings and take out a naked, mutilated body? Wouldn't it just be easier? Let's take it wrapped up. You know, why would you leave around and carry out of the tomb a naked body? What purpose would that be? There is no... So even in the reasoning of the story of the disciples themselves, there had to have been something else that happened. So we see that the missing body had to have another explanation. And there is no other explanation other than someone taking it. It was either someone took it or he rose. No one burnt it. There was no ash. The clothes was there. So we can reason. And it says John began to reason. He saw, and reasoning all these things together, it says he believed. God asks us not to blindly believe, but to reason, to look at the evidence, to read the historical facts, and understand just because this is 2,000 years old, we have manuscripts all the way back to the first century, original manuscripts, which would have been 50 years after he arose. And it says that even at that time, from Paul, it says that over 500 people have seen him, and they were still alive at the time of this writing. And so if this had been untrue, there would have been many people that they could have gone and asked and been eyewitnesses. And so we have, just because the time is long ago, does not eliminate the eyewitness accounts that we have that even a court of law would take into account, that Jesus rose. And so we can reason and see that this is, although it is maybe unexpected, it is the truth. The second part that we see here, and not only in John, but in others, is Mary. Not only John and Peter, but the fact that Mary is the one who saw him. Mary is the one who brings the news that Jesus is gone. Jesus is alive. Now, what's the big deal that it is Mary? And not only Mary, but the other women also were there first. The fact in that time, and this is where we have to understand, even though today we still deal with some of this misogynist ideas, but in that day, it was beyond even belief that a woman would be a credible witness. In fact, legally, they were not even allowed to be witnesses in a court. Because anything from a woman is not something to be taken seriously. Sorry. That was their thinking. It's not mine. Although some people, we deal with that today even. And so, why would they even write a story if they are trying to convince people? Remember, it was written back then. It's not written today. They're trying to convince the people of that day, not today. They cannot look forward 2,000 years. And, oh, in 2,000 years, people are going to have a different view of women. They would have no idea of that. It would be inconceivable. And yet they still, in that day and age, they still wrote that it was the women who came and brought us to the tomb. That the women attested to the resurrection. In fact, here's, and again, we apologize to the women, but here is from Celsus, a second century philosopher who fought against Christianity, who constantly tried to argue against that the resurrection is hogwash. This is the stupidest belief you could ever believe. And here's one of his criticisms. He says, here's how I know that their story is crazy. Because how could anyone actually expect rational men to listen to a testimony of a hysterical female? You see, this was his strongest argument, that there was no resurrection. It was a bunch of hysterical women spreading this story. But here's the thing. That being the strongest argument back then, and it was. Back then, people said, yeah, you're right. And they didn't listen to him at all. But if you think about it, that becomes the strongest argument today. Because if they stood by it. No, the women saw him. It is the women who brought me to the tomb. Why would they stand by that if that would hurt their own argument? It doesn't even make sense. If they were making up the story, this is not the story they would make up. It would not. Now, you might say, well, yeah, because now they're doing reverse psychology. No, they're not in our culture again. They could not look forward to see a culture that would eventually even accept that type of reverse psychology. They were in their own culture. That's us trying to make an excuse in our culture, but that was not the culture that they wrote this in. The only explanation that they would continue to stand by the fact that women saw Jesus, the only explanation is they really did. It was really the women who saw him. That's the only reason that they would write that, because otherwise it would not corroborate any standing to convince people that Jesus was alive unless he really was. Unless that really was the truth. And that as Jesus appeared to everyone else, it began to show that they were right. And so we see even in these two pieces of logical reasoning pieces that this unexpected event is very rational. And again, I encourage you to look way farther than that. I mean, there are great even books that will lay out many more, not only reasoning arguments, but physical arguments. I mean, we have physical testimonies and reasonings from the Roman guards, from the closing of the tomb itself, that they would do, the punishment that the Jewish leaders would put on anyone that would break into the tomb. And so I encourage you to look into that, but understand, we can believe in the resurrection, not out of blind faith, but out of a reasoning, rational approach. And in fact, I would say that if we do not take a rational approach to the resurrection, if you just say, I'm just going to decide to believe. Man, I just feel it in my heart and God's done good. I'm just going to believe. A blind faith that I just decide to believe, that type of belief will not get you through the trials of this life. And that is why God says, I don't expect you to blindly believe, because that type of belief is going to fall apart when you go through struggles, when people attack you. That is why I want you to know, I want you to have a solid foundation to know that there is a rational reason that you can stand upon it and you are not crazy, because the truth is reasonable. Second thing, we see that this unexpected event is merciful. It is more than just a grand explosion and declaration of life by Jesus, but it is a message of mercy. You see, the fact that he rose and how he came to those that he came to is not just a message that I'm alive and I'm the king, but the unexpected message is that you are loved and accepted, and the resurrection proves not just that we have hope in life, but that God loves us more than you can ever imagine. It is mercy, it is grace, it is simply an overflowing of the compassion of God. We see this, and again, the fact that he comes to Mary. And when we look at Mary, Mary was passionate for Jesus. She was a follower. We know the story. She had anointed Jesus. She went to great expense to pour out all she had for him. Here she is weeping at the tomb. And for all the passion that Mary has, really she's clueless. She really is, to some extent, that picture of the historical female. But Jesus chooses to reveal himself to Mary. And I think even more so, it's how he reveals himself to her. When she turns and looks to him, she doesn't even recognize him. For all the passion that she has, you have to understand, she was looking for a body. Even then, she had no concept of a risen Savior. She was looking for a dead body. Where have you laid the body? Where's the body? She kept asking. She was so fixated on the body that she didn't understand that he was alive. And so he had to reveal himself to her. She did not know him in himself. But look how he reveals himself to her. He comes to her and he begins to ask questions. We see the gentleness in Jesus. He says, "Why are you weeping?" You see, he begins to connect with her immediately. The resurrection is a connection with our pain. It is not a domination of power that he is alive, but it is the ability now, because I have risen, that I can connect with you where you're at. And he began to ask her, "Why are you weeping? Who are you looking for?" When we begin to look at even the process today of healing and bringing someone to a place of wholeness again, it is not about imposing wholeness. How many know sometimes that's how we are, because we're not really good counselors. We're not good. We just want them to get better. Just get better, right? Get over it. Come on. It's over. It's done. Jesus is the good counselor. He understands that the revelation of him is not something that is going to be imposed upon you, but it is something you must own from within you. In other words, Jesus brings her to the point that she can recognize him. But it does take him to bring her to that place. But he allows her to come to that place from within, to where she can own the understanding of who it is. It is not something that he overpowers her with. Even in the revelation to her, understand who he's coming to. He chooses to reveal himself to Mary. You know who Mary is? She is the prostitute. She is, first of all, a woman. Why does he come to a woman first? She is the demoniac. She was filled with seven demons. Basically, she's the reformed mental patient. And yet this is what the resurrection is given to. It is a message of grace that no matter who you are, it is for you. It's not just for the leaders. It's not just for the great. It's not something that is to be announced as a royal entrance. But it is to the person right where they are. And so we see the mercy and grace that God wants to enter into your life. And maybe it's unexpected that he wants you to see him. See, too many times we see God trying to show himself to us, and we think God wants to begin to impose himself on us. And yet, again, rationally and emotionally, he wants to lead us to that place to where we own it within our heart. But are you willing to follow his questionings and his leadings and his guidings until he is revealed? And so it is merciful. But the third thing is, it is personal. This resurrection is something that is not like Superman. He doesn't return, and this is what we don't understand. This is unexpected. If I'm going to return, if I'm going to raise from the dead, come on. I want everyone to see, I am risen. You know, he doesn't do like Superman. How does Superman return? I'm going to save a jetliner from crashing right in the middle of a stadium and stand before it on all TV, and everyone will say, he's back. But that's not how Jesus returns. The greatest event in history, that death is broken, Jesus' sacrifice is accepted, and so we are completely cleansed. That is something that deserves to be shouted from the housetops. And yet, that's not how he comes back. And okay, if Jesus doesn't want to make that big of a deal like that, listen to how he doesn't even say to Mary, even if it's just with Mary, he doesn't say, when she's weeping and she says, where is he? Can you tell me? And then she thinks he's the gardener. He says, have you taken him? You know what? He doesn't even say, Mary, it's me. Isn't that what we would have done? I mean, even if it's just me and Mary, Mary, it's me. He doesn't even say that. He doesn't even, you know why? Because there's more to the resurrection than him. Again, it is a personal connection that God desires. He desires more from you than a religious belief. And too many times we're stuck in the religious belief that is not going to get us the promise of the resurrection. But how does he reveal himself? He doesn't say, it's me. He says one word. He says, Mary. He reveals himself by saying her name. He doesn't say, Miss Magdalene. He doesn't say, my dear follower. He says, Mary. He knows her exactly for who she is. The resurrection is a speaking of our name. Because here's the thing. How does he reveal himself to us? But by showing us who we are. It's the love that he has for us, that it's not about him saying, I'm better than you and you need to worship me. And says, can I show you who you are? It is through him, as he speaks her name, he says, Mary. And immediately, her eyes open. The joy comes in. The unexpected, I cannot believe. It's you, teacher. And she grabs him and clings to him. I love this quote from Annie Dillard. She is a Pulitzer Prize winning author. She writes this. I had been a bell. I had been my whole life a bell. And I never knew it until at that moment I was lifted and struck. You see, I think Jesus, with the resurrection, wants to wipe away the deceptions of this world. Because many times we think we know who we are, or we have decided who we will be. And see, culture tells us, you know what? Be who you are. Grab it by the horns and take all that you want. The problem is we don't know ourselves enough. And so many times the things we have chosen for ourselves are the worst things for us. They are not who we truly are. They are not who God has created from within, from the very core of our being. And so we live a lie, and we are empty, and we're frustrated, and life is a struggle because we are constantly defending who we are and trying to build self-esteem. That's why self-esteem is such a big thing in our world, that man, we need to build one another up. But the problem is you're building up a wrong person. That's not who we are. Only God, the Creator, wants to show you who you really are. And when you come into that revelation, a connection with God, with the risen Savior, I'm telling you, then there is a fullness, a fulfillment, a satisfaction that cannot be found any other place. Because you see, we are made communally. We were made to be in communion with the Spirit, with one another. And so therefore, we can't decide for ourselves who we are. And in fact, we see it even in our life that we really find satisfaction when someone we respect or adore returns that to us and adores and respects us. Ooh, and then I have a sense of, then yeah, that's who I really am. But it's only because I've made a connection with someone else, whether it's that person we love or someone we respect, then we find that I have a self-esteem. But the problem is, they, again, are not our Creator. But if that makes us feel so good that we can find that sense of identity when we're with our friends, with our gang, our pals, that's why we like to spend time with them, because it kind of builds, I am fulfilled when I'm with them. Can you imagine what you would feel like if you ever begin to give God a chance to speak into you who you are? If that makes you feel good, what do you think the Creator of your soul would make you feel when you begin to connect with Him and let Him speak into your heart? And that's what Jesus wants to do. He wants to speak your name. He wants to reveal to you who you are. It is personal. It's the most personal and ultimate understanding that we have. And it's all because of the resurrection. That He is alive, that He can reveal Himself through us. Because then when we hear our name spoken, we can turn and see Him for who He really is. Many times we cannot see Him for who He really is because we're too caught up in who we are. And yet if you will let Him push past the facades of your life, then you can see Him for who He is. He's not just the gardener. Oh my Lord, it's Jesus Himself. The final thing is, it is wonderful. You see, the resurrection is the most wonderful thing that ever came to you. It's the greatest promise, and that's why it almost seems like a scam, because it can't be true. It's too good to be true. Jesus says, first of all, He says, don't hold on to me so hard. Mary, you're squeezing the life out of me, and I just got it back. Many people think that He's saying, don't touch me because I'm still holy. I think He's telling, I haven't ascended yet. I'll be here for a while. You don't have to hold on to me so tight. That's what He's saying. He says, I haven't ascended yet, okay? I'll be here. There's coming a day I will ascend, though, and this is what He says, but I will ascend, and I will go to my Father, and then what does He say? And your Father. I'll go to my God and your God. What's the wonderful thing that he is telling them? From now on, you are no longer just a servant. I'm going up to God, and because I am going to God, you now have a direct connection to God, and everything's going to be made right. He's now your father. What more wonderful thing? We haven't gotten an inheritance. It is an inheritance, but it's an inheritance with the person still alive. He died to give us the inheritance and then came back to enjoy it with us. He's saying, my God is going to be your God now because I'm going to sit with him, and whenever you need anything, I'm right there. It's more than $50 million. It's the inheritance of the kingdom of creation. You are now a son and a daughter of the creator of everything. And you are coming in to that life. If we will follow Jesus, if we will give ourselves to him for these few years on this life, it says, you will then come and be with me forever. And we're going to remake this world. We're not going to live in some spiritual limbo floating on a cloud with a harp. You're going to get a new body, physical body, in a real world, the way it was meant to be from the very beginning, and we're going to make this thing right together. How great is that? That's wonderful, but it's only because of the resurrection. It's not a religious problem. It's not a philosophical, now will you believe in me and will you follow all these teachings? It's not about that. It's a personal relationship with me because I have risen, which signed the adoption papers that you are now family. It is the most wonderful news that anyone can tell us, and it's not a scam because we can reason it out, we can check it out, we can hear his name, we can feel his mercy, we can begin to experience that deposit before we even receive the fullness of it. Here's the actual promise that he told Mary before he died. And it was when Jesus, when Lazarus had died and he came to see Lazarus. And of course, he asked her, do you believe in the resurrection? She said, yes, I believe in the resurrection, because resurrection is going to happen in the future, when at the end of all time. He says, no. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he will live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said yes at the time, but I don't think she really believed it. Because see, here's the thing, and the same thing that the disciples could not understand. Their idea of resurrection, many of people believed in resurrection, but it was at the end. Okay, at the end, everyone's going to rise, you know, and God will judge everyone. But there was no concept of a physical resurrection. It was just kind of a spiritual thing at the end. And so this idea that Jesus says, no, I am the resurrection. The fact that someone would resurrect in the middle of time, personally, was outside of even their understanding. And so the fact that they would even make up this story of Jesus rising from the dead is not even in their comprehension. This is a story, it would be like someone back then telling a story of, well, this jetliner is going to come in and land. They have no idea of that. There's no way they could even tell that story because there's no cultural or even understanding of that to happen. And even for a Jewish person who has spiritual connection with God, still would not have even understood resurrection. Because that's something at the end, like Mary thought. Which is another reasonable thing that this, how could they even tell this story unless it really happened? And Jesus says, if you will believe, and though you live, you will never die. And if you die, you will live. So the thing we must do is, will we reason and believe? Will we let the rational explanation of the resurrection dawn on us? Will we begin to see and believe? Will we let him speak our name? Will we even open our hearts to let the Spirit speak our name and begin to enter into a relationship of mercy and grace where he leads us in a process of self-discovery, and in so doing, we come into a revelation of God himself for us. So today, I pray let's let the unexpected burst into our heart, because it's too good to just ignore and to go out of here and just live your life, because that life, as good as you think it is, I'm going to tell you, you're going to die. I don't want to bring you down, but you're going to lose it all. Money's going to go. Your body's going to decay. The things you love doing, hope you love doing them, because you're not going to be able to do them for too much longer. So what good is that? So why are you grasping for that? Jesus says, come and walk with me, and we'll enjoy this life, but more importantly, we will have new life. So will you come? Let's bow our heads.